We are 4 months away from the 2018 Olympics in Korea, and we already know that the NHL isn't going to South Korea. We've all come to grips and accepted that. But are we in danger of one of the world's hockey superpowers not going on top of all that? Welcome back to the Big Show. Pat Steinberg along with you. I don't know where the dial tone came from, but I do know it's time to welcome in our NHL insider, Chris Johnston from Sportsnet. Mr. Johnston, how are you?
I'm good, Pat. I thought you were hanging up on me there.
No, would never do that because I've got a lot to pick your brain on. And I got it. Like, we're 4 months away from the Olympics, and this is not just a hockey story. This is an Olympic story, period. But there's a real fear that Russia will not be permitted in the 2018 Winter Olympics. What's the latest that you're hearing, and can you kind of bring us up to speed on that story?
Well, I think the biggest issue for the people that are dialed in about this, you know, people especially in Europe and still taking to do with the Olympic tournament without the NHL players, is that there's a high degree of unpredictability. You know, they're really at the mercy at this stage of the International Olympic Committee, disciplinary committee, Russian athletes, potentially the entire Russian team. There's certainly been a lot of discussion about the possible blanket ban stemming from something called the McLaren Report, which was produced last year, which basically uncovered in tremendous detail systematic state doping in Russia and you know how it was performed, how it was covered up, and specifically how it was designed to yield as many gold medals as possible at the Sochi Olympics. And you know, there's a couple important points to touch on here. First of all, no hockey players were named in the McLaren Report, so a lot of the fear surrounding this is more that you know the hockey players might get caught up in the larger Russian team's ban. But there's also some talk too, Pat, that AHL preemptively might pull its players out of the games at the risk of the embarrassment of you know potentially being excluded. So you know I can say in doing some reporting on this in the last 2 weeks that fears are real. I know it's a sort of dramatic idea, especially this close to the games, as you mentioned. But, you know, you can only imagine the attention this story would be getting if the NHL
potentially
about them not being able to participate.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, that's if you know, Russia ends up pulling out or sorry, if they end up getting banned from the Olympics, then certainly we're talking about the hockey competition just from that single exclusion taking a big hit. But I mean it because of the implications on the KHL and what this whole thing might be, this has wide-ranging kind of implications for the entire hockey competition.
Well, I mean certainly we probably have Russia as the favorites right now, even though we haven't seen what the teams are exactly going to look like, but just based on the fact that they have the fewest number of pros over here in North America that are ineligible compared to countries like Sweden or Canada and the U.S. And, you know, secondly, I suppose on some level it's up in the air about whether all the Canadians and Americans and Swedes playing in the KHL will be able to get free of their contracts. I mean, I can't say we're getting deep into hypotheticals to say that they won't be able to, but there's at least some doubt about how that's going to work because, you know, what the KHL has said already is that, you know, if there's any blanket ban, they're just going to eliminate the break in the schedule that they've contemplated, and if you're under contract, you know you'll be expected to be present for those games. So, you know the fact that this all hangs out here just a couple months before the puck drops in Pyeongchang, it would potentially leave the tournament down a team. It could leave the teams that are left down some players. I mean, this would be a real nightmare, I think, especially for the International Ice Hockey Federation, you know, which kind of administers the event. And you know, I don't know what the tournament would look like. I don't know what it would mean in the big picture. I mean, they're still competing for Olympic medals. But, you know, it's already a point of debate, I think, without the NHL players. What are we left with? You know, what does this mean in the grander scheme? And, you know, if it's further diluted, it's going to be a very sort of odd, thing that comes together.
And I know that this might be an impossible question to answer, but when would we know, or when would a decision come down? When would a potential ban, like, when would this all come to pass? Like, would it be soon, or are we talking about a month? Are we talking about this happening potentially in January and then everybody really scrambling?
Well, the most recent timeline put out from the disciplinary committee is that they're going to make a ruling at the end of November. So, you know, we are down to potentially a week or two at this point. assuming that they stick to that timeline. I mean, even with these other sports, I mean, you know, I'm less involved in that as a hockey reporter, but, you know, it impacts speed skaters and figure skaters and, you know, all kinds of different athletes. They've already banned six cross-country skiers, you know, as a result of this McLaren report and, you know, doping found during Sochi. So, you know, I think that there's a real push from the IOC's end to get this resolved as fairly as they can and as soon as they can. So it probably is something that we're looking in a pretty short window here.
Okay.
We'll have a better idea of what this is going to look like.
He's Chris Johnston, NHL insider from Sportsnet, joins us every Tuesday and Thursday on the big show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Okay, to the NHL, where nobody seems to know the answer to this question, and I'm curious as to what insight you might be able to add to it. What is going on with Carey Price in Montreal?
Man. I'd love to know too. I mean, if I'm being honest, I don't know that much more than what anybody else does. I mean, my honest belief here is I'm not sure how much the Habs know. I mean, the one thing that they know that we don't is they would have specifics on the injury, but you know, I don't believe that they have any specifics in terms of the timeline related to the recovery. And you know, there's a lot of issues around this injury to unpack. I mean, the fact that he suffered it in a warm-up in Minnesota and played through that, and you know, potentially made it worse, certainly didn't make it any better by doing so. And you know, the fact that he's about to start an eight-year contract extension, he's the highest paid goaltender in NHL history. I mean, the Habs certainly are going to want to show caution here, you know, with the investment they made in him. I know it's tough to do that in the middle of a season, especially the way their year started, although they managed to reel off some victories without Carey Price, which has probably eased at least the tension, you know, slightly. But the fact that, you know, we're now 2 weeks from when he suffered that injury, one that, you know, that both the team and the player have gone to great pains to say is minor, and that he's now gone a couple of days in a row here without skating. I mean, there's some red flags here. And you know, you can't completely ignore them. I do think that we have to take the team at their word. You know, I do believe that they learned from 2 years ago where, you know, they didn't give out very much information at all. As that injury stretched from days to weeks to months and ultimately cost them, you know, most of the season, you know, they're trying to be more transparent now. But, you know, I think there's a degree of unpredictability here. And part of that might just come down to the fact he suffered previous knee injuries in the past. If, you know, they say this isn't the exact same type of nature of injuries. But you know, when you're talking about a goalie, it's really hard to play limited if you're dealing with issues in that region. I mean, just the act of being in the crouch or pushing off the post for your lateral movement, it's nearly impossible if there's issues in that area. And you know, my best guess is that he's dealing with something along those lines, and it's just not getting better at the rate they were hoping.
It sure does remind me anyway of 2 years ago when an injury happened and it was minor to begin with, and then it just he kept on, and then he didn't come back, and it ended up really marring that season for him. And that's why there's so many red flags raised to me, because we've already kind of gone through this already once with Price.
Well, exactly. It was minor last time until it was major, and you know, you can't rule out the possibility of that again. You know, I think it's a little premature for us to say it gets to that stage, but you know, it doesn't appear to be a good sign when he had been skating, and you know, he calls the media around his stall and points out that he needs some rest and it's not getting better, and that you know, now he isn't skating. I mean, just knowing that the protocol it takes to get back to playing games for any players, I mean, he's going to need some consistent time on the ice. He's going to need a practice for sure, if not multiple practices where he's a full participant before he's back for the half. And you know, in the meantime, as the days slip by, I mean, these are just as important than the ones in April, perhaps, because you know they might not be in a position to get there unless you know Charlie Lindgren. He's doing well. You know, he's been a nice story for Montreal, getting off to a 3-1 start to his NHL career. I'm not sure what Antti Niemi has left, but you know, they brought in back up at least on a short basis. But you know, this is going to be front page news in Montreal, I would say, until there's more clarity. And right now, there's just not a lot of concrete facts out there except what we know from 2 years ago and what we know Carey Price isn't doing today.
And this might be an unfair question or presumptuous, but you know, knowing what we saw 2 years ago and knowing what we're seeing right now, I kind of worry that, like, we know how incredible a talent Carey Price is, but are we in danger of Price's career kind of being marred by injuries. And you know, when it's all said and done, we look back and say, geez, what if that didn't happen? Or what if there weren't so many injuries? You know, how much further along could he have been? How much better could the career have been, knowing just how good a player he is?
It's impossible not to feel that way. I mean, he missed virtually that entire season after the first, what, month and a half, 2 years ago. And, you know, maybe he's back in a week and this is more of a blip. But, you know, just even the mere fact that he's having multiple injuries, you know, deemed his lower body, you know, which to me I think are more threatening type of injuries to a goaltender's long-term health. And you know, potentially you could see a reoccurrence there. I mean, the thought has to be out there. I mean, I certainly know that's a talking point in Montreal. And then, you know, Carey Price himself was asked about that when he met reporters earlier this week, and he kind of shook his head and, you know, didn't really want to go there. But and even management, who, you know, I could understand why they gave him the contract extension that they did, you know, when he's playing. There hasn't been much to pick the last three or four seasons of who's probably the consensus best goalie in the game. But they've got a pretty big investment, a lot of money tied up, a lot of cap space, which is significant. And, you know, it's just reason to wonder how much of that time he's going to be able to play and play at the level he's accustomed to that earned him that deal.
Chris Johnston's with us, Sportsnet NHL Insider, every Thursday here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. The trade that came together between Edmonton and Los Angeles on Thursday night, I can't say that I was going to bed every day saying, when are the Kings going to trade Mike Camilleri? They or when are the Oilers going to move Juuse Jokinen? It's just a 34-year-old and a 35-year-old being moved for one another. The trade itself is not hugely significant, but I just find it so odd that you don't see trades quite like that very often.
Well, they just ended up being a pretty nice fit here, I think, and that's why it is a unique trade. You know, the issue, I believe, is players just signed with those teams, too. I mean, that's kind of the strange part in the summer, and signed for, you know, deals that you capitalize, and, you know, there just wasn't a fit there. I think in my Camilleri situation in particular, he was expecting to step into more of a role, get more minutes, and, you know, he didn't really like where things were going with L.A., and you know, I think he was open to moving, and with Juuse Jokinen just never found his step with the Oilers. And, you know, they were able to find, you know, some kind of common ground here. The Oilers sent out a note to the other GMs about 2 weeks ago, I believe, maybe 2.5 weeks ago, letting them know that Jokinen was available. And, you know, in this case, they're able to get Mike Camilleri, who, you know, at a time when they're looking to add some scoring. And, you know, I sense that Edmonton is pretty realistic about what Mike Camilleri is at this point, but he scored a number of goals in the league. You know, I think if he gets, you know, maybe a second line, maybe third line role, plus some power play time, might be able to produce some offense for that team, because strange as it sounds, you know, that's been something that's plagued them. So because of the contracts and because of the lack of fits after a month and a half in their new destinations, I think that this is kind of a peculiar trade, and just the right fit at the right time.
Well, and Rob and I were talking about this yesterday, but the Camilleri one specifically, because earlier in the week is, hey, let's write the story about Mike Camilleri's come full circle. Here he is. He starts his career with the LA Kings. Now he's back in Los Angeles, back where he loves to be. And then he's traded in November to Edmonton. It was just kind of the timing of the whole thing was ironic.
Well, as a print reporter at heart, I sympathize with that, because I've probably made some bad decisions at time to time, or you have a good idea that makes you look bad. Because, yeah, I think, you know, look, that was the thought for sure in Mike Camilleri's mind, that he could come full circle in his career. You know, Rob Blake, the general manager, someone he knows well. You know, I believe he thought that there was potentially a spot on Anze Kopitar's line for him, especially early on in the year with Marian Gaborik out injured still to start the season, that he figured he'd get some fairly big line minutes with some players and, you know, have a chance perhaps to extend his career beyond the 1 year that he signed a deal for if he could put out an offense. It just didn't come to pass. His ice time had been dwindling. He did have a 4-point game early on in the year, which accounts for half of the points he had to this point. And, you know, it just didn't fit. And, you know, the reality, I think, for a lot of older players around the league is that, you know, teams don't have a ton of loyalty to these guys, especially, you know, players that they just brought in. And we've seen more and more teams go to young players. And in this case, Kempe has been awesome in LA. And
yep.
Down on more willing to really turn it over to younger players if those guys show promise. And you know, that's what happened in L.A., and then Mike Camilleri didn't find himself with much of a role there anymore.
Final question for you, Chris, and that is just your observations. I mean, it's the big story, the only story in Calgary today after last night in Detroit. But what were your observations as that whole thing turned kind of from a blowout to a blowout with a ton of fireworks?
You're talking about the little delay there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, just want to be sure we're on the same page. You know, first of all, I didn't mind it. You know, it was kind of entertaining from where I sit. You know, I do think it's left the Department of Player Safety with a tough choice here, because my reading of the Rule 70-10 for the purpose of an altercation, you know, it appears to me black and white that Luke Witkowski should be assessed an automatic 10-game suspension. I know that there's some other facts around it, you know, including the fact that Tkachuk had you know, given him a little tap when he was off the ice. But, you know, I think it's a tough one for the NHL to unpack. And unless they've reached a deal in the 15 or 20 minutes with the talking, you know, last I heard, they were still. It's kind of a complicated thing for the league. I mean, we don't see many fights like this. And it really wasn't compared to, you know, some things you and I have seen in our life, Pat, in NHL games. You know, wasn't all that bad, you know, but you know, the rules are the rules. And, you know, I'm just very curious to see how the supplemental discipline looks coming out of this one, because, you know, it looks like he should get a game suspension, but I suspect the league doesn't want to give him one if they don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Well, we shall wait and see on that front, because, yeah, it's the big story in Calgary today. No doubt about it. Hey, as always, Chris, appreciate this. Apologies for being late. That's on my shoulders, nobody else's. So I apologize for being as late as we were. And we will talk to you again on Tuesday.
Sounds good, Todd. Have a great night, man.
You too, buddy. Chris Johnston from Sportsnet. He's our NHL insider.